on the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello from spring training down here in not so warm but still sunny Arizona. Welcome in, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio down here in Phoenix for the rest of spring training. We've got our first week of camp under our belts, and there's Brewers baseball on WTMJ this weekend. So we get to start the show with some breaking news, shall we? This is an update that's been a long time coming. I think no one's surprised by the update, but the Brewers have officially extended Pat Murphy, their back-to-back manager of the year. He is now guaranteed for the next three seasons. They have restructured this year's deal. You may recall he was heading into lame duck status for the 2026 season. Both sides always wanted to get back together, and here they are. So, restructured for 2026 and for 27 and for 28, plus there's a club option in 2029 for a fourth season, if they so wish, for Murph. And also, Jeff Passan from ESPN reporting the details, making just shy of $9 million, one of the highest paid managers in baseball. And now, when we talk about managerial, you know, contracts, and we talk about the terms, and we talk, it's not exactly, you know, an easy science, like there's no war for managers or there's no, you know, ERA for managers, that sort of thing. But one thing that was always talked about when Craig Counsell left the Brewers to go to the Cubs and got the deal that he got is that, and I'm putting words in Craig's mouth here, but I think this has been very well sourced, is the fact that managers in Major League Baseball had been grossly underpaid for years. And Craig was sick of seeing college managers getting paid more than Major League managers. And finally, we're starting to see that trend come back in the proper direction where the best in the world should be getting paid more. So, you know, Craig Counsell got a new deal. Doc Roberts with the Dodgers had got a new deal. Even now, Murph gets a new deal. Then you look around the league, the ones that have stable manager and stable front office combinations, they're the ones that are paying their managers well because they know how important the position is for success of their club. And I think another beautiful thing about Murph, and we'll talk to him tomorrow. Now, this broke after we were already away from the ballpark and everyone was gone for the day. And we'll talk to Murph tomorrow and to Matt Arnold tomorrow about, you know, sort of the, you know, the mutual desire to stay put. And it's been 10 years now in Milwaukee for Murph. The last two, of course, as manager, previously bench coach with Counts. But Murph's somebody that maybe on the outside, people are like, he can't possibly be analytically minded. He can't possibly understand the new age of baseball. And I'm here to tell you that is so far from the truth. That is so far from the truth. This isn't, he is the oldest manager in baseball right now, now that Brian Snitker has retired. But he doesn't see the game as if the stereotype exists. And I'm not trying to be ageist here or anything, but the fact of the matter is Pat Murphy sees the game. Excuse me, I got a piece of dust bunny in my throat here. But the point being is that Pat Murphy is somebody that, in my opinion, understands the timing of the new rules, understands the impact it can have on his club, and he still has that desire to have his thumbprint on this ball club, meaning the stolen bases, the defense, the extra leads. Like, it's just a, I don't want to say it's a college baseball mentality because that's a low-hanging fruit when we talk about Pat Murphy. What we should be talking about is the fact that Murph has been so savvy and so open to education on the new age of baseball. And this is a very analytically minded front office and still a very analytically and baseball minded, you know, manager and coach's office. So I think the two blend so well. And I think that sometimes we hear Murphisms and we hear the jokes and we hear the funny topics that he has for us in the media. But at the end of the day, when we get, like, we got him going today for a little bit on some of the stuff about base running, and I'll air some of that next week, but like about base running and about holding runners and about just like the little things of the game, the little nuances that you may or may not be thinking about in the first week of spring training. But that's what's on Pat Murphy's mind. He's a meticulous note taker. He's very organized, and I think he's a perfect fit for the Brewers at this day and age. So congratulations to Pat Murphy. Congratulations to Matt Arnold for getting this deal across the finish line. If you have thoughts, 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620. That's our Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. On this program, up next, we're going to hear from principal owner Mark Attanasio. He spoke to the media earlier this week. I have a column up on WTMJ.com as well, talking about the Brewers process that Mark Attanasio was enlightening us in the media with earlier this week. We also have sit-down interviews with Quinn Priester and Jet Williams later on here in the program. We're going until 9 o'clock Central Time right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio, live from spring training. We have a lot of programming next week, both Monday and Thursday. I'm double-checking my calendar here because it's full of baseball here on my schedule now, which I'm fired up about. Monday and Thursday of next week, we'll have two-hour Brewers Weekly programs. So 7 to 9, or I should say 8 to 10 Central Time, 7 to 9 here in Arizona. But 8 to 10 Central Time, we'll have some longer interviews, we'll have a couple of sit-downs, we'll have some deeper dives with Murph, we'll have Matt Arnold join the show, we'll have a lot to talk about, as we'll have games to react to as well. The first game is on Saturday, of course, the Brewers hosting the Cleveland Guardians, and the full broadcast schedule is up. Both games this weekend are here on WTMJ. As well, Jeff and Lane will be on the air, so fired up for all of that. And you can follow me on social media at Dom_Cotroneo, Dom_Cotroneo. I've been trying to share as much as I can from down here in spring training, daily video reports, live ABs, that sort of thing. And also on Instagram, Dom, C as in Cotroneo, baseball. We spoke to the media, to Mark Attanasio, principal owner, as he always does down here in spring training, addressing the crew down here. And honestly, after all of the backlash and all of the reaction to last year's, you know, is my job to win a World Series, I really enjoyed this session because I think Mark was a little more, you know, pointed and just simple in his answers. And there are some really good ones in here. And the column that I wrote over on WTMJ.com, it's under the Dom's Notebook section. I encourage you to go read that. And you may disagree with me, and you may think I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, and that's okay. But the truth of the matter is that how many times do the Brewers have to prove it to say we should believe in their system, that their system is working, that it continues to churn at a remarkable rate with trades and maybe, you know, not extending guys you'd expect or sort of understanding of how a roster can be fluid and depth is always precious. And to still be able to make the playoffs 7 of the last 8 years and be on a three-peat of winning the division despite the Chicago Cubs and their massive market size right there down the road. Nonetheless, one of the interesting answers from Mark in this session was talking about the similarities between owning a baseball team and having a successful investment business like he does on Wall Street.
I see this in my investment business. I've, you know, the parallels. This is season 22. I have 35 years investing on Wall Street, and we have an exceptional track record over a long period of time because we do what I'm saying here. You somewhat stay in your lane. You know what you're self-aware and know what you're good at, but you have to be open to what others are doing. And so we're often at Crescent, we're a second or third adopter. So, you know, in direct lending, once there were 5 of us, and I thought we were late to the party. Now there's 75. We were early. You know, we were, you know, if you look at, you know, when teams got into the kind of pure analytics, Matt, what, 2015 you started here?
Yeah.
So, but by that point, you know, Andrew was of the Dodgers since 2012. Rays were doing it since 08, before he was there. And so, we've tried to take best practices from what I've learned as an investor and apply it here. And Matt, interestingly, while he's, you know, in baseball, his analytic approach is to look at risk. You know, a lot of times when you're an investor, you think about making money, you know, you're managing risk. He does an exceptional job and his team of managing risk here. Very few surprises, positive surprises. We talked about Quinn Priester today winning all those games. And, But that, anyway, long answer.
Marsh,
we'll hear from Quinn Priester here in a moment as well. But I really thought it was interesting when we talk about, I shared the clip on social as well, that when they traded Caleb Durbin, one of the first calls that Mark Adonasio got, in fact, the first call was from Bud Selig of just like, what are they doing? What are you hearing? Like, just like the rest of you, just like the rest of the fans, right? Like the former owner and commissioner also want to be tuned in. Like, what are they thinking? This is a quality player. But yet, when you hear Mark talk about risk assessment and what they try to do with always having something ready to go and always having a plan, they're not flying by the seat of their pants and just saying, oh, well, we have to trade him because we can. They got an offer that they really liked. They added left-handed pitching, which is something they needed. We'll talk about the 40-man roster at the very end of the show here today. But then furthermore, when you look at what the Brewers have coming, it was a hard decision. And that's what Matt Arnold is paid to do, make hard decisions. Jesus Madei, Luis Peña, Cooper Pratt, Brock Wilkin, these are young studs of the future. And the Brewers want to make sure there's room for them, that there is no sort of like, oh, man, what if we had room for that guy? And you sell Caleb Durbin at a time that he's hot. So all of this is risk management and understanding what could or what could, you know, what's the worst case scenario, what's best case scenario, likely something in between that. Another thing that really caught my ear was just talking about, you know, this is something that I asked about labor, and I've been so tuned in to the history of baseball labor right now. Obviously, it was a really interesting week with the Tony Clark news of the Players Association. You know, I just asked, with the salary cap or with the limitations potentially coming to the minor leagues, I mentioned that in the column too, where do the Brewers fit in all of this? And, you know, begging for a salary cap might not work in the favor that the Brewers might think. And Mark never said the word salary cap. I want to make that very clear. But I really did like his answer here.
Whatever the system is, however it looks like the cards are stacked against us, we're going to compete. We've done that for 21 years. You know, through last year, before last year, we had the fourth most wins in the National League from day one. We had every disadvantage. So whatever it is, they're going to, you know, we're going to compete. And of course, there's very active dialogue and all of that at the league level behind the scenes. And, you know, what we're trying to achieve in labor, just everybody knows, and in baseball, forget about labor. In baseball, we're trying to have competitive balance. So it's, the fans can come out and have hope for all 30 teams. We don't, if there are some advantages that certain teams have because of what they're doing, you got to be careful about taking those advantages away, because then maybe you'll disrupt balance somewhat.
So one of those advantages that he's talking about is what the Brewers are able to do on the farm. And there has been, Major League Baseball has been rumored to try to start to standardize technology and access to technology in the minor leagues. And one of the things they've also been rumored to do is to limit the size of front offices and coaching staffs. Now, I don't think that's ever going to happen, but whatever that system changes, if something in the player development side changes, that hurts the Brewers. And if you have a salary cap, the Brewers are never going to flirt with the salary cap. And furthermore, the Brewers are never going to flirt with the salary floor. I think it's really important to distinguish, yes, the Brewers are the smallest media market, but they've never been dead last in payroll. I think that's something worth mentioning, that all these people who are not from Milwaukee like to complain about the Brewers. Oh, how can't they spend? We know why they can't spend, but yet they still win. So what's your team's excuse for not developing in the minor leagues, investing in the minor leagues? It's just like investing. Here's a stock that you do research on. You learn about the company. You learn about maybe where it fits in the economics of whatever, you know, field it's in. And then you make an investment. The same thing happens in baseball. You learn about a young player coming out of high school, maybe. What's he like as a teammate? What are his skills? What are his parents like? Does he have siblings? Like, it's just like that. And I think the way that the Brewers run their organization is the envy of a lot of teams, especially in the small markets. Now, teams like Tampa and teams like Cleveland are also a shining star of teams that can get it done in small markets. And it takes somebody sticking around with an extension. Look at Cleveland, Jose Ramirez. Look at Milwaukee, Christian Yelich and Jackson Churio. So getting creative with the funds that you do have is so important heading into continued success with that coming up from the minor leagues. So I really enjoyed Mark's conversation with us, and I encourage you to go read my notebook, Dom's notebook, on WTMJ.com for my take on why we should finally be believing in the Brewers process. One guy that really benefited from that process joins us next, Quinn Priester. I interviewed with him earlier this morning right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, welcome back, Brewers Weekly. Doc Catronio, Quinn Priester joining us here live on the program tonight. Quinn, what a year. I mean, when you sit down and look at everything numbers-wise, is it performances, is it individual moments that you look back at last season that you're most proud of?
I think it's just kind of what we achieved as a group. You know, obviously still falling short of the goal of winning a World Series, but, you know, going through the season, going through, you know, struggles and adversity early on, you know, as a team and personally, you know, having a couple rough starts, but then being able to rely on each other, rely on the staff with Jim and Hooky and Christian, you know, Danny and DeMonastert and all those guys, and then obviously the defense. To be able to do what we did was pretty special, and then personally, yeah, proud of being able to just be consistent and give ourselves a chance to win most times I went out to pitch.
We all point to that game after the one against the Cubs in May, when after the opener and things are obviously not off to a great start with the Brewers. What clicked? What worked? How did you sit yourself down with the coaching staff you mentioned of just get it back on the rails?
Yeah, I think one, it was coaching staff not losing faith in me being able to, you know, win games for, you know, the big league team, and making sure I kind of knew that. And so I felt like that was a big difference for me. It's just that unwavering faith, and then, you know, also then kind of believing in myself and starting to focus on, you know, the day to day more than just trying to kind of focus on results, you know, ultimately just trying to control the moments rather than the outcomes. And then I started to be able to stack some good moments. You know, I felt like going into the Orioles game after that Cubs game, simplifying everything, really staying, I think, for the most part, sink or slider. Like, we didn't really throw too much else, getting back to what worked, and then, you know, being able to evolve and take things one step at a time rather than, you know, just try and in one start become an entirely better pitcher. Let's do that over the course of the next 20 starts, and I think we were able to do that.
So when you look at that body of work at the end of the season, I know you were dealing with little things at the end, but like heading into the postseason, getting to pitch in the postseason, I mean, if I told you that, you know, week one in, you know, AAA, like, hey, you're going to pitch in the NLDS and LCS, you would have taken that, right?
Absolutely, yeah, and to be able to learn from some of those failures as well, you know, like, certainly not the best thing, my first postseason appearance, but was able to learn from it and move on, and I think that, you know, start against the Cubs in May was kind of a prove it to myself that, hey, you know, you can turn things around in one start, you know, you can make an adjustment and, you know, go from having a really, really bad one to having a really good one, and being able to do that in the postseason, I think, was huge. I think it's something that I'm always going to be able to look back on, and yes, we can make an adjustment, you know, from one start to the next, and then obviously over the course of the season, I think I proved that as well, and now it's just getting back to doing what works in terms of the process, getting back to the routines that worked so well last year, evolving those routines, figuring out, you know, the different things. That's what spring training is for, and yeah, so being able to get back into that process with Hooky and Jim, you know, just kind of the first weeks here, it's been really good.
So you talk about adjustments. Is it mechanical? Is it mental? Is it where you are on the mound? Like, kind of back to basics. Take me into what actually seemed to work for you when you make those adjustments.
Yeah, for me, it was very much like not mechanical. It was very much keeping everything at, you know, the glove or in the catcher's glove. So if I make an adjustment, it's something with my eyes or it's something with a thought rather than, hey, my back leg needs to be here. I need to feel this. That tends to slow me down, and that's when my misses tend to get really, really big. If I can just think about being in rhythm, being athletic, you know, working quick, because that was something that I felt I did well last year. Like, those things seem to take over the thoughts, and I become less dependent on, oh, my hands need to be here or there. And so that felt like it was a big shift for me to where get away from the mechanics a little bit, trust the athleticism, and take that onto the mound every fifth day. And honestly, once I started to find that working, I didn't deviate much from it. You know, I wasn't too concerned over what the movement plots between, starts were, because during starts it was always pretty consistent. And then therefore, you know, in bullpen sessions, we're just competing. You know, hey, this is, we're going to simulate a left-handed hitter who's, you know, good on the ball away, so we want to throw front hip sinkers. And hey, we want to simulate a right-handed hitter who does well against sinkers down and in, so we want to backdoor it, and then we can go in there late. And so being able to create game situations like that, I felt like, you know, created some pressure in practice situations within competition rather than how I had to move or my mechanics. And so once they got into the game, it felt like it was able to slow down a little bit more because I'd already put some pressure on myself to compete in the work sessions.
You're too good at giving answers. Like, you don't have to be this, like, you know, retrospective and good with the media. I mean, you're just the guy that I think a lot of us on the media side, I think fans have realized, like, you're a Midwest kid, you're, you know, Chicago area, Northern Illinois guy, and it's just like, you just feel like, oh yeah, and then I throw a baseball pretty well. How do you, like, the person versus the athlete, how do you compartmentalize those, if at all?
Yeah, I think I love to think, no doubt, and so that's benefit, and it can also take away from kind of like what I was saying, to where I like to know why things work, right? Like, oh, I had a really good game, why is that? And sometimes that can be counterproductive because, like I said before, then, oh, my leg lift was a little bit higher this game, oh, my arm got to this spot, and then once I start to repeat that, I, like, those thoughts of mechanics slow me down, so it kind of becomes this, like, hey, that was really good, but you kind of have to let it go a little bit because in 5 days it might be a little bit different to get a good outcome. And I felt like one, and that's what I think athleticism is to me, I guess, is like, I'm not married to one. Yes, like, the delivery is going to look the same, but on any given day it might feel a little bit different, and being able to make that adaptation and not be like, oh, well, my, you know, back leg doesn't feel as good as it did 5 days ago. You still have to find a way to execute, and then within every day, you know. So I guess, I don't know if that's answering the question you even asked, but yeah, like, I do like to think, and I need to be able to shut it off on the mound, and that's why focusing on the location is a lot better for me than focusing on, like, the mechanics.
Last one for you here. You know, this time last year, you're down in Fort Myers, you're trying to audition for a Red Sox rotation, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but, like, you're a little bit more stable footing here, right? And you understand your role, and you understand what the organization thinks of you. What can that do for you mentally and for your development getting into the 2026 season?
Yeah, I guess I don't look at it that way. I like that. You know, I think it's, you know, you earn major league spots, and, you know, regardless of what you did last year, you know, you're going to have to come out this year and produce and get to a spot where you can help the major league team win. And so, yeah, I definitely think through last year, I've earned some trust within the organization. They know how I work, they know how I think, and they know what it definitely can be, but it's still on to me to work to be one of the best five pitchers in camp, to come out and start and win games for us. And ultimately, you know, I know I can do that, and I think that's what last year did for me, and now it's, you know, the ball's in my court to go out and work, get myself to a spot where, you know, we know that I'm going to go out and win games this year, and certainly feel that way. Feel confident being able to do that, but the work can't change.
Thanks for the time, Quinn.
Yeah,
best of luck.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This. Seriously, those answers? That's not like a regular pitch. Yeah, I just want to throw strikes, execute my game plan. That's why he had to kick off our coverage here of talking Brewers baseball and talking starting pitching and that sort of thing. Speaking of starters, how many are they actually going to carry? What does this all mean? That's up next on 620 WTMJ.
More Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
First of many shows down here from the Valley of the Sun. I'm Dom Catronio, 855-616-1620, as we're live here. We'll be live again Monday and Thursday for a couple of longer editions of Brewers Weekly as we get our coverage going of Brewers baseball. Also working on a couple of side projects, some videos, and some longer form stuff that I'm really excited to bring with you by the end of spring training. You can catch it all on social media at Dom_Catronio and Dom C Baseball on Instagram. Now, pitching. We talk about Quinn Priester, and we've said this all off season long, even after all the trades. Sharpie Brandon Woodruff, Sharpie Jacob Mizorowski, Sharpie Quinn Priester, even if he's being humble in that last answer. Those are three firm footing. How much deeper are you going to go? And today we asked about Aaron Ashby to Pat Murphy, because Ashby actually, ironically enough, as a few people on social media noted, Ashby was also the starting live AB pitcher. You know, he was the starter in like all of the playoff games. So but that was kind of funny. But is Ashby going to be a starter? They're going to build him up for multiple innings, but I don't think they're building him up like a quote-unquote starter anymore because of all the reinforcements they've been able to add. And does Kyle Harrison become the lefty that you want in this rotation? Does Chad Patrick have a home? Does Logan Henderson have a home? Does Brandon Sproat have a home? Does all this, like, the point being, and I had asked Pat Murphy about this today, just like 150 innings is really hard to come by these days. And, you know, becoming a qualified pitcher is 162 innings. But simply put, like, it's just the new 200 innings. Guys don't throw every fifth day and six, seven innings every single time, right? That's just the way the game has changed. And there's reasons for that. We can spend a whole nother podcast doing that. But the point being is when you look at it last season, in total, of guys that threw 150 innings in baseball, there were 70 pitchers threw 150 innings last season. And, of course, we talk about it with the Brewers, is that the only guy that got qualified last year was Freddie Peralta. Now, granted, when you include minor leagues for Quinn Priester, he would have been a qualified starter. And when you include the postseason, he would have been a qualified starter. But he was over 150 innings. But that was it, right? I mean, Miz was lower than that because of the IL stint. Quintana only had 130 or so innings. Chad Patrick had about 120 innings in the regular season. But when you look at all of the guys the Brewers have available to them, they, and I asked point blank, Pat Murphy, do you think you'll have more or less guys cross 150 innings than you did last year? They had two last year, and he thinks less. And it's not because they're going to make everybody an opener. It's because they have all this depth because they intend to use it. Now, I believe the pendulum will swing back one day where you need that guy that's going to give you 200 innings, and that was Brandon Woodruff for a while. But the way the Brewers are operating right now is that virtually this entire starting pitching staff is back next season. And there's still more coming, right? There's still Tate Keener, and there's still Bishop Letson, and there's still Bryce Message. There's still young guns coming way down the pipeline here. So the Brewers are just making sure they have enough depth because they're going to need every single one of them at some point. We talk about this every year. It's like clockwork. Oh my gosh, they have too many starting pitchers. How are they going to? No, they're going to use them all. There's always going to be somebody comes up tender. Somebody's going to need it. Somebody's going to underperform. Somebody's going to surprise. Somebody's going to have an injury that you don't foresee. I mean, think about it. Nestor Cortez made two starts and then didn't see him again the rest of the year last year. Tobias Myers made three starts in the first 2 months of the year, right? And then was optioned. So there's just so much that can be determined in the first month and a half of the season, and the game determines that. But in the meantime, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to know Kyle Harrison a little bit more. I'm looking forward to getting to know a little bit more about Brandon Sproat and Shane Drouin. We saw Drouin throw today, actually. And I was watching with a player unnamed. We're just kind of analyzing it together, first time watching it live. And this player looked at me and was like, man, that's easy. That's really easy. That's great mechanics. And the command is there. And we'll learn more about Shane Drouin throughout this camp. And I mean, he's not going to make the team. We don't think he's not on the 40-man roster. We'll talk about the 40 in a little bit. But the Brewers, I mean, you kind of don't have a wrong answer, right? Let's say the last two spots go to Chad Patrick and Logan Henderson. Cool, they've already been in the big leagues. Okay, let's say the last two spots go to Chad Patrick and Brandon Sproat. Also, both have already been in the big leagues. Okay, Kyle Harrison and Chad Patrick. All right, cool. Like, you see what I'm saying? And this is where, no knock on these guys, but I'm going to say a name, a couple of names here. The Brewers, you know, depth that we, quote-unquote, depth from a year ago was Tyler Alexander and Elvin Rodriguez, okay? This year, the depth is Chad Patrick and Kyle Harrison and Brandon Sproat. Like, guys that you know are going to be here beyond this year. Those guys were rentals. Let's see if it sticks on the wall. And the Brewers are in just so much better shape leaving camp with those kind of guys as opposed to what ultimately did and didn't work out at times for the Brewers last season. On that note, talking trades, talking Brandon Sproat, how about Jett Williams, his teammate? He faced him in live ABs today, right after we had this interview earlier this morning. Jett Williams joins the show next on 620 WTMJ.
Back with more Brewers Weekly after this. This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back, Brewers Weekly. Jet Williams joining us here on 620 WTMJ. Welcome to Brewers Camp, man. I mean, this is quite a whirlwind to be this close to camp, and we talked to you over the Zoom of just, all right, you know, getting ready to meet all these guys. How's the first week and a half so been meeting everybody here in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's been great. I think just right when I got traded, I came immediately here. Been here for a couple of weeks now, so just trying to learn the ins and outs of the facility, get to know everybody, but it's been great so far.
When you hear about Milwaukee and you watch them, you know, from afar versus what is actually the reality of those first 2 weeks now, I know it's still early, you're still learning a lot, but like, how much did the expectation versus the reality line up?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously they win games here. Everybody is very, very close to each other. They're all kind of messing around in a good way, and then when it's time to be serious, they're serious. So I think we balance it out pretty good in the locker room. I think that goes a long way with especially just a long season. And everybody's coming together. Like I said, just kind of them all being themselves instead of only worrying about baseball, and just kind of once baseball's over, like once you get in the locker room, it's just you can be a normal person again.
You got to experience your first, you know, Pat Murphy hype speech beginning of the year, and I know you weren't a part of this club last year, but I think you got the message pretty quickly about what this team's all about, and it kind of fits your profile, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the type of organization we are, the way we play, it's really hard. You know, it's how could you not want to play for him? And honestly, just play as hard as you can for him every single day. You know, he's a great coach. You've seen me in the last 2 years. He's manager of the year. So, no, I think just the expectations very high. Just come in and work, and we're here to win. And it just goes to show.
When you look at your baseball upbringing, when you look at everyone's going to make assumptions about how, hey, man, I know the feeling. Granted, now I'm holding the camera, you're still playing ball. So when you hear all these whispers, or just, you don't even have to hear them, just like, hey, he's short, he's not going to be this. How do you, you know, let the naysayers know?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of heard it my whole entire life. I really try not to really worry about it much. It is what it is at this point. So just really kind of go out there and play with Brewers baseball. I mean, play with a little chip on your shoulder, play hard. Yeah, just leave it all on the field.
As you learn about Milwaukee and the city, and you know, hopefully we have you up there at some point this year, where it's just that you are going to be a quick fan favorite. I mean, you see how they treat Sal, and you see how they treated Caleb when before he was traded too. Do you think there's something about your style of play, and that maybe some people think like, oh, he's, you know, he's just short guys, what he has to. Like, no, that's kind of bred. That's how you expect to play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think just because you're short, you're tall, it doesn't really matter. I think it's you still got to hit the baseball. You still got to play defense. You still got to run bases. I don't really think anything changes. I think it's just obviously you get labeled as, hey, you're shorter than everybody. So really, like I said, just kind of go out there and play your hardest every single day. I think in 24 when I got hurt, it's try not to take anything for granted now, because you never know when's the last time you're going to play this game. So I think, like I said, just leave it all on the field. I mean, go out there and play as hard as you can every single day. Obviously, I know that you want to play hard every single game. It's 162 games, but you can do the things the right way. Just respect the game. When it's time to hustle, you hustle. And then obviously there's times where it's like, okay, you don't need to give that 100%. But I think just for me growing up, I've always kind of given that 110%. And it's more people like, all right, you got to not do that every single time because you won't make it 162. So just kind of learning the ins and outs of, I mean, it's going to be my fourth year, so I kind of know like what to do and the situations of what to do. So
now in this camp, we know you've got plenty of experience up the middle. You're getting some looks at third base. How are the early impressions of that, working with Matt Erickson, working with the entire staff, of learning another new position in your repertoire?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, short and second, center, I mean, I've played it so much now, it's just I don't really think about it. You know, I think I've played third a little bit in high school, but obviously it's not the same like up here. You know, just really trying to get with a great infield group. We have a great infield group here, whether it's coaches or just even the players here. Just pick their brain as much as I can. That's kind of what I've been doing. I mean, I think for me, you still got to field the ball. You still got to throw it to first. And for me, it's still on the left side of the diamond. I just think I'm still at shortstop, but I'm playing in. That's kind of the way I think about it. I talked to a couple of guys that made the transition from short to third that are in the big leagues right now. So just kind of picking their brain and seeing like what they have to say.
Who are some of those guys that you reached out to?
Kind of the main one was Bregman. You know, I worked out with him a little bit this offseason, communicate with him throughout the year. You know, he made the transition from short to third, and he's done it at a high level. He's making a lot of money doing it, but obviously he's a great player, great human. But yeah, just seeing like the ins and outs of what he does on an everyday basis of how you play, the angles and whatnot, but whatever. It may be at third, but for the most part, it's just, like he said, you got to catch the ball as the big thing and throw it over there. Just, so it's a little bit easier than short. But yeah, it's, I think, like he said, just keep everything simple and just play the ball like you're playing it at shortstop. Just, you got to know if you're going to go in or back. So,
if there's a billboard outside of Jet Williams of like, this is how he plays the game, and for everything to go right to make your big league debut this year, well, how would you describe that billboard? What are the things that are just so patented to your game that will bring you to the big leagues?
Yeah, I think for me, it's trying not to really worry about the future, what's to come. Obviously, I think we're human, so it's, I'd lie to you if I said I wasn't thinking about it or haven't thought about it. You know, I think for me, it's just come to the field every day and get ready to work. I think for me, it's whether you're hitting or you're doing anything fielding, just try to get 1% better, because throughout from spring training to the end of the year, you're going to improve, whether that's hitting, defense, just getting with a great group of coaches. And yeah, I think for me, it's play hard. Like I said kind of earlier, just play as hard as I can each and every day. And I think everything will take care of itself. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Best of luck all season long and stay healthy. And look forward to talking more, Jet.
Yep, thank you.
All right, can't wait to learn more from Jet Williams all season long. We'll wrap up the program after this on 620 WTMJ.
Catch more Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, as we say goodnight here, I've only got about 90 seconds left. A reminder about the 40-man roster and how spring training begins. The Brewers currently don't have anybody on their 60-day IL, and that would create another 40-man roster spot, but they're full. They got all 40 on the roster, meaning if somebody's going to make the big league team here in a month and a half, they need to be added to that 40-man roster like a Jet Williams. Brandon Sproat is already on the 40-man roster, but Jet Williams would need it to be added. David Hamilton is already on the roster. There's a handful of other non-roster invitees that maybe have an outside shot of making the club, but that's something to keep in mind. There would need to be a corresponding move if somebody like Jet Williams would be added to the active roster for coming out of spring training. But it seems like that's going to be Luis Renjifo, because his signing made it an even 40, the potential new third baseman for your Milwaukee Brewers. So once again, our next broadcast will be Monday night, a different day, I know, but it'll be longer, 8 to 10 Central Time, available in podcast form on Brewers All Access, wherever you get your pods, as we'll have both Monday and Thursday night shows next week with even more guests, even more Brewers talk as we get ready for the season to begin. And again, Saturday, 1:10 Arizona Time, 2:10 Central Time, for the opener of the Cactus League. We do not know who's pitching in that game yet, but it'll be the Cleveland Guardians and the Milwaukee Brewers. And then it's a split squad on Sunday for the crew, where they have the White Sox in Glendale. And then at home, they'll be hosting Kansas City. We hope you enjoy it. Can't wait to have baseball back on your radios. Our producer is Isaac Marquardt. I'm Dom Catronio, signing off for the night from Arizona. We'll talk to you Monday. Keep on swinging.